It is pissing down with rain outside, so the sound quality of this probably doesn't match what you're used to. Just wanted to let you know it's temporary. I am working within the constraints of the much coveted bullshit laptop lifestyle. But that's a story for another day. Today's story is Katie Wyatt, and I have to say, there are so many different stories that I could have done entire podcast episodes on with Katie. Her dad was Stolen Generation. I was really interested to explore how that had impacted her life. She has been through cancer not once but twice, and she's not even 40 yet. She's had children via surrogate, and these are all incredible stories on their own. But what we found, where we found the conversation really led us, and where I think it would bring the most value to you, is Katie's idea of empire by design. And I'm not sure whether this was intentional, but it's definitely the theme that came up throughout our chat. Katie is an entrepreneur and an employee, and she loves being both. I wanted to have this conversation. Well, I didn't know I wanted to have it before in this way, but it's turned out this way, and now I'm really glad I had it. And that is because I think sometimes we think we have to be one or the other. We have to be a good employee or we have to be a good entrepreneur, and we can't be both. We can't have both, but we can. We can design our life whatever way works for us, whether that is a full-time entrepreneur or a full-time employee or an employee with a side hustle or a hustle with a side employee, with side employment rather. We can create it any which way we like. So I'm really excited to share this with you. I think you guys are really going to dig Katie, and let's dive in. Let me introduce you to Katie Wyatt. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
My story starts with my dad, who was a stolen child, which for people that aren't listening in Australia probably won't know what that means, but it's basically the terms referred to the Indigenous people of Australia when a lot of them during the kind of 40s, 30s, 40s were taken from their families and raised as white people. That sort of baggage that comes with your parents really influences you, and it definitely had a huge influence on me. I think it sparked a lot of, I suppose, the social justice side of my life and the things that I believe in and sense of fairness, but it also drove my parents to really push my brother and I to achieve quite, you know, in this kind of technical version of school and university and all of those things that parents like to push us to do. So I guess in balancing those, I then kind of left uni and went into a very corporate job, graduate job, you know, like a good girl, and worked in corporate for years and years and years. But it was probably then that influence of my dad that pulled me back to the social sector. So I just couldn't get excited about making money for money's sake, especially for other people, big businesses that they really have no face behind them. And so I ended up going into the social enterprise space, and at the same time, pretty much exactly the same time, I started my own business, which is, you know, I'm a solopreneur, I'm building a business for myself, my lifestyle, for freedom, all of the reasons so many of us start, I guess. But it is very much related to me doing what I love to do rather than doing what I feel like I should do. So that's probably the career story. And I guess interrupting all of that along the way has been having cancer twice over the past 12 years, it's been since the first time. And that's I think been the gift of that has been to actually cause me to stop and take stock and make decisions and change careers and start a business, whereas I was always tended to be one of those people that thought a lot about doing stuff like that but never actually took action. Whereas coming close to like death or having a major health crisis or all the other things that can happen in our lives makes you actually go, well, if I don't do it now, when am I going to do it?
Yeah, sure. I have a girlfriend who is part Aboriginal, and her mother was also stolen. And the impact that that had on her life was instrumental in the rest of it so far. And for her, some parts have been a gift and some parts have been a bit of a curse. And so I'd love to explore that a little further if you're open to that.
Yeah, sure.
What did it mean for you growing up?
It's interesting, and I think every child of that generation will have a really different story, but we didn't know for a start. This was something that the way that my dad dealt with it was he didn't talk about it. So even to the point where there is a story that he may have told people as a young 20-odd-year-old guy that he had a different cultural background. I can't remember what it was, but that was sort of his line. So my brother and I were actually teenagers. I was late teens. I was, I reckon, 18 when I found out, and I felt like such an idiot for not knowing or not asking the questions that would have led me to find out. But that was just how my dad was. He was, very loving, generous man, but very private about the things that really struck deep, I suppose. So in a lot of ways, what's interesting is to see the impact it's had on my brother and I, because we've both sort of gone in very different directions. I mean, I left the city where I grew up in, which was Perth, in Western Australia. I haven't lived there since I was about 24, not because of this, but I just wanted to strike out on my own, whereas my brother has stayed. My brother is a very high-profile politician in Western Australia, very vocal about Indigenous rights, all of those things. So we've had quite a different experience, whereas I typically probably feel like I'm limited in what I can say publicly because I don't feel like I know enough or understand enough. But it is still a strong, I mean, the first board position that I was on a few years ago was an Indigenous Native Title Service provider. So I'm keen to explore, but the way that I'm educating myself is probably quite different to someone that's grown up with that life and with probably more connections to the community that they've come from as well, which I didn't have.
Yeah. So have you dug back into that at all?
I have. I had a dream once of being the person that would write my dad's story, write his biography, I guess. And so he gave me all the papers that he has, all the government papers from that time. And I've pored over those, and it's, I haven't sort of done so much with it because I haven't really known how to. But it is, yeah, I am really interested in it because, and I'm probably interested in it in really understanding what the impact that it's had on him, but also then the impact on me, which sort of kind of sounds really selfish.
No,
like, it's all about me.
But it is, right? Like it is too. Like, and it's okay for it to be about you as well, because it's like those kind of things have the potential to really change the trajectory of our lives and the way that we see the world and the way that we interact with the world. So at the end of the day, while it is about your dad, it's also about you and the way that you have been affected by it.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess that is, if I did write his story, it probably would be more memoir than biography, because it would very much be through the lens of me as his daughter and that experience and how that shaped me and our relationship and then my life, definitely.
Yeah. So as a stolen generation, he didn't have family around?
No. So he was pretty much I actually learned more about this from watching a movie. There's a movie called The Rabbit Proof Fence.
Yes, yeah.
Which was huge in, I think it was the 90s. Yeah. It was a huge Australian movie. And it was so interesting to me because what I did learn was that the orphanage that all the kids in that movie are taken to was the orphanage that my dad was taken to. So that almost became my, oh, like this is the place where my dad was. And it taught, sort of showed me a lot of the way they represented it. And he was then, it was decided that he kind of, his skin was white enough that he could be educated and really brought up to be an educated white member of society. So he was then moved into boarding schools, and that's where he grew up, was in Catholic boarding schools. So he didn't have family. He does have family. He knows that, well, he knew, he's passed away a couple of years ago, but we know of cousins and things like that. But Dad was never really interested. He just kind of created this little insular family unit that was us, and that was enough for him. And he didn't want to explore any further, probably because he saw how much it tore apart other people in that same position, to try and go back and try and reconnect with this part of you that's been taken away for so many years. He never saw that as have a positive effect on people. And so I think he just went, I'm not going to do it. But having said that, he worked in Indigenous rights. His entire life was recognised as a real leader in that space. But personally, he wasn't interested in trying to build that family network again.
Yeah, so what do you think were, for you, what do you think was the key things that you really took away from being part of the family unit that you were in?
I think that, you know, the closeness of those relationships, and probably, you know, it's probably why I am better interpersonally on a one-to-one small group level, because I am used to that very small unit. The big extended families, I really love them. I kind of look at them like, oh, wow, that must be so exciting. But I don't have that firsthand experience myself. Although I realized, you know, both my brother and I have gone on to marry into big families. So yeah. Maybe that's part of why, the wanting that extended network that we just never had growing up. So, yeah, I guess it's that, and just also a lot of the things I recognise in my dad that I recognise in me. So good things and bad things. Sense of humour is a great thing. The way we manage money is a really shit thing. but, you know, it's like any of us. I think we can see a lot of our flaws and our strengths come straight from our parents.
Oh, yes.
Thank you very much.
I know. Sometimes I open my mouth and I'm like, Mum, is that you?
It's terrifying, isn't
it? Is. It's totally terrifying. So like the social justice thing, you were kind of talking about having worked in social enterprise and feeling a strong sense of justice, I guess. And how does that play out these days for you? Is there a part of you that still embraces that within your business?
Look, I think probably not so much in my business, and that's more because I'm not brand new, I'm a couple of years in, but I feel like I'm still a little baby with training wheels, that I wouldn't say I'm in a position to do much with it. Where I see it represent itself in my business, I suppose, is more about I connect with people who are trying to change the world in whatever way they're trying to change the world, you know, and that could be a tiny little thing about teaching people to be more productive. You know, it doesn't have to be the solving world hunger stuff, but I think it's people like us that, you know, there's a purpose to what we're doing. We're not doing it just because it pays the bills, because we'd probably choose a different way.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes it doesn't. And that's why I have a day job, you know, and I also love my day job, and my day job is in social enterprise. So I get a lot of satisfaction from doing that. But that also allows me the luxury of building a business in whatever haphazard way I decide to do it, because it doesn't have to pay the bills yet.
Yeah. I mean, because you have a really strong Facebook community going on too around your podcast and your business. So let's just talk about the evolution of your business as it stands. So when and how it all kind of comes together. So when did you actually start it?
I started the business in late 2014. Potentially early 2015. I don't know my business birthday like most people do. I know my podcast birthday.
I don't know my podcast birthday, but I've also had so many stupid businesses that I don't remember all the dates. I do remember, I don't actually remember the date, but it was around this time, 2005, I think, that I started, well, that I registered Killer Copy, my voiceover agency, as an actual business. And actually, this brings me to something that I wanted to explore with you, which was, for me, the catalyst for me starting that was really, I had always felt a call to kind of work for myself, that I'd always had like a side hustle going on. I was kind of a lemonade stand kid, but yep. I was miserable working for other people. I just never felt, I don't know, like, this is going to sound really weird, but acknowledged or something. There was something about working for, and I only ever worked for men. So working for the man that made me feel a bit disempowered. I don't know, like, I never really could have full control. Not that I'm a control freak, but kind of a control freak. Anyway, diversion. So I'm interested to know, what was the catalyst for you to go out on your own and start something for yourself?
I'm the complete opposite. I want to be a lemonade kid. I'm so not a lemonade stand kid. I was the dreamer, but I'm a good employee. I hate admitting it, but I really am. I'm really good. I work hard. I'm a great member of a team. All of that stuff that makes me very employable. But I always wanted to have a business. And I don't know what it was in me that was just there. I think I would read about people's businesses, or I would read even fiction stories about people running their own businesses, and I would think, I think that would be fun. I think I would be good at that. But I never, and I was one of those, and you see this all the time, once you move past that stage, you see everyone that's still stuck in that stage of going, once I have the really great idea, then I'll start. Idea.
Yeah. Once the lightning bolt strikes,
yes,
and I am feeling 100%, you know, ready to go. Here I am, world. It's not that way usually.
Yeah. And it's not that way at all. And I waited years for that moment, sadly. But, you know, as everything happens in perfect timing in the end. But I actually, we were pregnant, and it's a whole other side note, but not me, but we had a surrogate have our children for us, well, two different surrogates actually. And we had a surrogate who was pregnant, and we lost the baby very early. It was probably about 7 or 8 weeks. So really early, but when you're dealing with IVF, you obviously know from the minute. So it's not like a surprise. And I think we'd done so much forward planning about the arrival of this child and then it goes away, that you suddenly look, you need to fill that space. And that's when I actually almost bought a business and then started a business that didn't go for very long, which was because it was just a really bad business model for me. But yeah, that was kind of the thing that gave me the push, was actually, I need to fill some time so that I don't get depressed.
Yes. I know. I think about that, like, if I had done things differently. So I kind of started the business in order to have the family, and then the family never kind of came. All of a sudden, it did come. And I was very grateful for those, whatever it was, almost a decade of working for myself alone. Because had I gone from that into motherhood, I mean, I struggled anyway, but I would have really struggled having gone from a full-time work environment straight into the isolation of motherhood. And so for you, you mentioned that cancer was a part of your journey too. Can you talk to us about, you know, when that showed up for you and what it kind of, what were the lessons that it taught you?
I got sick on my 27th birthday, which is showing my age now, but it was very sudden. It was one of those things where I was out partying because I was turning 27, and I can remember having a conversation with someone saying, I'm feeling a little bit run down, I think I need to go to the GP and have a checkup. I didn't even know what a checkup would require. And then within a week of that, I was just flat out in bed, very, very sick, you know, taking antibiotics like a good girl and wondering why it wasn't getting any better. And then ended up, I think, dragged myself back to a different doctor, could barely get up the stairs to her office, and she took one look at me and said, you need to be in hospital, and spent the next 6 weeks pretty much in intensive care, cardiac intense care, because my heart had failed. And it was one of those things, it wasn't like a classic presentation of cancer at all. It wasn't a classic presentation of anything. They didn't know what was wrong with me, but basically all my organs were failing and I was falling apart. And it took them probably, they sort of got me well with drugs, with steroid medication. If anyone's been on that, they'll know the fun and games that that can cause. But it did save my life at the time. And it wasn't until probably 3 or 4 months later that they actually biopsied a lymph node and went, oh, actually, you've got Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's cool. We know what to do with that. This is great. So then, yeah, went down the whole chemo route.
That's probably one of the only times when you're kind of like, yay, I have cancer. You know, what?
It was quite hilarious. It was one of those comedy of errors, really, you know, when you're in the public hospital system, every time you go in, you'll see a different doctor. And I went to see a doctor who wasn't my normal doctor, and I said, oh, by the way, I had a lymph node biopsy the other day. Can you see the results for that? And he'd opened these results and you could just see him across the table just going, oh, shit, I have to tell her that she's got cancer and I've never met her before. And he was himself, like gave me his, it was a Friday, gave me his personal phone number to ring him on the weekend. And I was kind of like, oh, okay, well, I wasn't like shrugging my shoulders, but I think it was that so much had happened, it was kind of like, oh, well, I'm not overly surprised. And then my actual doctor got wind of it and rang me and was like, this is good news. This is good news. We know how to treat this. So it was, yeah, it was kind of funny way to get told you have cancer. But yeah, you know, 6 months of chemo, and then it all came back within about 3 months after that. And that's when they went, actually, it might not have been cancer, or if it was cancer, it's also something else. And then I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease called lupus, which was what was causing the heart failure. So, I mean, tons of people have lupus, mostly women. It's a bit like multiple sclerosis. It's just one of these weird things that attacks your immune system in all sorts of different ways. It can be quite mild, and I had it very, very, very badly for about 5 or 6 years, and then it just kind of went into remission on its own. And then cancer came back. I know, it's rather a long and complicated medical history that I have.
Yeah, so when... So when you went into business, what were you doing? Was it related to your journey that you'd been on, or was it just a totally separate thing?
It was related, because it was about I'd sort of, you know, as you do when you have a health crisis, I'd kind of started on this whole wellness journey, educating myself, and you know, went on Ian Gawler's 10-day retreat, which he's a sort of famous cancer survivor that kind of preaches the very alternative route, you know, meditation and diet and those sorts of things. I did 10 days of his retreat, and that was kind of like the first time I'd sort of gone, oh my God, like there's another way to look at disease in the body. But that's been a long journey. I'm still on that journey.
I think that's kind of a journey that you never really get off.
You never get off
until you die.
Yeah. But, you know, I feel like such a slow learner because some people are like, they realize this stuff, they learn, and they just change all their behavior immediately. I did not change all my behavior. I'm still not changing all my behavior. And I struggle with that regularly. But, you know, it's like, I guess that's just how I roll. But yeah, the first business was selling superfoods online. So yeah. I discovered all these foods. I was too late to it really, because by the time I started, you didn't really need to buy them online because the big grocery stores were stocking most of that stuff. There were big stores like standalone organic grocers and things. So I was probably came to it too late with no clue about marketing and product marketing. And I just hated packing boxes and delivering them because I was also working full time. I was like, this is crazy. I hate this business. And yeah. So I killed it. I killed it within about 6 months. And then really just moved in. I was podcasting by then and talking to lots of wellness entrepreneurs. It was definitely, it's always been where I'm interested. That's been my entree into business, is people working in the wellness space, because it's been so interesting to me that I had no idea that these people were around when I got sick. And I wish I had. I wish I'd known. Maybe they weren't around. You know, health coaching's kind of a new thing, really. Whereas I think I would have really benefited from people like that in my life back then.
Yeah. And so you did the Wellness Entrepreneur podcast for quite a while, a year, two?
Yeah, I changed its name end of last year. So it's been over 2 years now. It was just 2 years in December.
Mm. And so what changed for you? So you went from the Wellness Entrepreneur to Empire Builders.
Look, I think I just grew up a bit and realized that, I mean, I'd started with Wellness Entrepreneur because I'd, you know, interested in wellness. I'd wanted to just pick a niche. And then I kind of realized it wasn't really relevant to my audience, to the people that were listening to the show, the people that were joining my Facebook group. And I remember saying to the people in my Facebook group, if I changed the name of this group and wellness went, how would you feel? And most of them said, well, I'd probably feel relieved because I feel like I'm here under false pretenses. I feel like I'm not healthy enough to be in here. And so that was kind of my indication that it doesn't define who I work with and what I do. And it was really a definition of market. And I just wanted to move more to a definition of my message rather than my market.
Yeah. So do you feel like you started the podcast? Like, I'm interested in exploring this because what I find myself with some of the people that I work with is that they're hung up on needing to know what their message is exactly before they start. And that just adds a level of procrastination that really isn't necessary, you know, often not necessary. And that it's okay just to kind of start where you are, have conversations that you're kind of curious about and allow things to organically change. And do you feel that's kind of the process that you took through your journey?
Definitely. I started in a place of going, I think I know I want to talk to wellness entrepreneurs, and I knew I eventually wanted to work with them. So there was some level of business strategy there. And I encourage people to think about that stuff as well when they're, you know, choosing between competing demands in a business. If you want the podcast to grow your business, you've got to have some clue what you want to do with it. But you're right. Like, there's a line where you have to go, I'm never going to nail it until I start it. And the minute you start, you evolve so much and you learn so much, and you can't do any of that growing without starting. So yeah, definitely. I think it's a huge procrastination point. That and cover art and what am I going to call it? And all those things stopped me. But in retrospect, I started so much quicker than I thought I would. Knowing what I know now, I probably would have taken 4 more years.
Yeah. Well, I took 10, so I was glad just to actually do something. So something that I wrote down before when you were talking was you mentioned that you're a really good employee. I guess what I'm interested to know is what are the challenges that you find working for on your own for yourself without having that team around you?
I'm glad you came back to this. Look, I think I don't mind not having people to bounce ideas off because I tend to prefer sitting down and working stuff out first before I go and canvass opinion anyway. But I do, I think it's, if I was doing this every single day, I'd be really lonely. I'd get sick of myself. I need more company. And I think podcasting really helps with that because you're having so many conversations. And if you're working in a coaching business or then you're probably having enough conversation. But I think there's nothing like being able to just have a laugh with work friends. I've always worked in the CBD of the city that I live in. I really would miss that as much as it can be annoying in other ways. But I think what's surprised me more is how much I've loved doing my own thing, because I always thought, oh, I'm a really good COO, like I'd be a really good right-hand person for someone that's got the vision and got the charisma. I'll be really good at executing for them. And it's only by starting my own thing that I've realized how much creativity and ideas and vision I do have for myself. And I don't want to do that for someone else. I want to do that for my own thing. And that's exciting. That is a thing I never, ever thought I would feel. And I had to start the business to realize I would feel that.
Yeah. One thing that I really struggle with, and I mean, that's why I started my co-working space, was because I was, you know, I did feel really lonely. And mm-hmm. and I'm a bit like you. Like, I like to plan out my idea or at least flesh it out a little bit sometimes. I'm also not very good at that, actually, before canvassing opinion. Because when I start to canvass opinion, then the doubt starts to set in.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just jump too quickly as well, and I haven't really thought things through. Like, I'm not I'm not very calculated in any way, shape or form. So that's something that I kind of struggle with. But for me, it's really been, you know, the freedom of being able to work by myself and for myself is actually really, really important to me. But I have to balance that out. I have to balance that out with connection to other people. And I think it's really important for us to know what our picture of success looks like, right? Because if your picture of success means going, you know, spending time in the city, going to a workplace and having connection and having a supportive, you know, work friends around you, and it doesn't mean sitting at home on your own, you know, in the middle of nowhere like me, then you have to craft your life around what it is that brings you joy and feeds your soul, right? So
yeah.
Do you feel like you would ever leave a day job, or would you like to still have that lifeline? Or I don't know if it's a lifeline, but sometimes it can feel like really isolated.
I can't imagine leaving, but I don't know. I struggle with this one because I'm like, I love my day job. Like, it's my dream job. It's something that, you know, I knew was my dream job, and then it came up and I got it and I love it. It's, you know, and that's, I'm 4 years in and I'm still in the honeymoon period in a lot of ways. So I can't imagine leaving that job, but I also have a real attachment, and this is more of a mindset fear thing, I think. I have a real attachment to the professional identity of myself, because I've spent 15 years as that person that has the LinkedIn profile that looks nothing like my business website, that talks about things that I don't talk about on my podcast. It's almost like I am two different people, which I'm trying to close that gap more and more, because it's weird to be two different people, but it is. And I can't see myself giving that up. And in a lot of ways, I think I probably put an unconscious ceiling on my own results in my business, because I'm a bit scared of, what if my business did so well that it made sense to give that up? And I'm not ready for that.
Yes. Yes. I just recorded a free flow convo that went out today, and it was all about this fear of success. But then what happens? You know, it's like, there's a few elements to it for me. And part of it is, you know, the fear of upsetting the people or making the people closest to me feel uncomfortable because I've reached a certain level of fame that opens me up to, you know, criticism of other people and that, and just, I don't know, it can impact the people around us, but then there's this other part where it's like, you know, success can be really scary because there's some big decisions that you have to make in order to have it. And some things we have to let go of in order to have it. But then I guess it just comes down to us really defining what success looks and feels like personally to us, not necessarily what we think it should look like.
Yeah. And I mean, you're right. Like, I think you get these big fears. And I was always the one going, who would be scared of success? Hello. But then when you do unpack it a bit, you realize that it is. You're scared of the change that will come if you're successful, or the relationships that will change, or the decisions you'll then have to make about your life, that when you've just got two things running concurrently, you're not forced to make a decision as long as neither of them starts to take over the other one. And I've forced myself into that position. At one point, my business was taking over everything else, and I almost forced it back into just living quietly alongside. I think you kind of then have to go, well, what if it did? What if it did do really well? And what would, you know, and start to think, well, I could change the number of days I do here and there. Like, I can deal with it. So yeah. It's not all going to change overnight. But I think it's the fear of the overnight that is what cripples us.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't happen like that.
No, it never
which is the weird
like
thing.
That.
It never happens like that. There's always time.
It's so irrational what we worry about.
I know it is so. So another thing that just came to me while you were talking about that, you were talking about having the two different identities. And I relate to that in my business because I do have a few different, not identities, but Killer Copy is a very different client. It's a very much just a, you know, a no-nonsense business. And then I have this other stuff going on, which is way more personal and way more me. And, you know, marrying the two, there really isn't a way to marry the two. And so I kind of live between these two spaces. And you were kind of mentioning being the same. But then there's this other space as well, which is the motherhood thing, balancing them all. Like, how do you do it?
You don't. I know. I don't know. Like, I don't know. In fact, I wonder how you do it, like in terms of having multiple businesses. And I have another, like a really good friend who has two very distinct businesses and brands. And I keep saying, can't you pull them together? Because it's hurting my head. But, you know, it works for her. And I'm like, I don't know. I was even thinking, I was talking to someone this morning about potentially expanding some of the things I'm doing to a new avatar. And it is an avatar that's much more corporate. And I'm like, oh, that's scary because then I have to, do I need another website where I talk corporate speak? Yeah. And that just like terrifies me. But then, you know, I just think it is unmanageable, but that's what we're all doing. And I think that is what is great about doing your own thing and from home is you can be more around as a mum for the pickups and the drop-offs or the, you know, whatever. Like, I love that about my working from home, the parts of my life where I am working from home, because when you're a CBD 9-to-5 worker, you don't have that flexibility. And that's something I have built into my life, both in my day job and in my business, that I really value. And, you know, you're right. It all comes back to what does success look and feel like? And sometimes you don't know until you've either created the wrong thing or you've created the right thing and then gone, wow, that feels really good.
Yeah, totally. You got to have skin in the game. Like, that's a terrible saying, but you do, right? Like, you can think about what it might look like, but until you're actually on the field getting your knees dirty, it's just theory.
Yeah, I love that you said it that way. I think you're right. It is sort of what I was trying to say before, like until you are out there, you can only theorize and imagine what's going to happen. You will never, ever learn, or your learning is, it's not real learning. Yeah, you just, yeah, skin. I like skin in the game. I think you're right. You've got to.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's on the couch. Biggest fear?
Biggest fear is disappointing people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally get that. I've had one of those weeks where I've really just realized how much I do in order to avoid disappointing people. And yeah, it's part of the reason I'm so fucking exhausted.
Yes. And then you probably then lead yourself to disappointing people because you're trying not to.
Yes. I actually just had a conversation with a friend of mine who had listened to my episode that went out today, and she had written this thing. In it, I kind of talked about that, about disappointing people, and I talked about how I'd written this post and it absolutely was not in any way directed at anyone, but one person in my life took it as being directed at her, and just the shame spiral that I went into over it, just feeling so disappointed in myself but disappointed in her that she would think that I was capable of that, and there was just all this stuff going on. What I've realized through that is that, you know, you can set the intention of which you say something, but you can't really be in control of the way that it lands with somebody, because they're always going to be looking at it through the lens with which they're looking at the world, not the lens with which you meant it to land. So it's really exhausting trying to make sure nobody is disappointed in you.
It is. And it's like, it's irrational, because what you've said is exactly right. But I spend so much time trying to control the lens by which somebody interprets things I say or do. And it's, but because of that, you know, because of how, you know, it's because of my own crap. It's not theirs. It's my stuff. Yeah.
Complex beings.
Complex.
What's your biggest struggle at the moment?
I think it's that, you know, that confidence that I have everything I need to do what I want to do. I'm always looking for the person to give me the permission slip, or the person that's going to give me the piece of advice that's going to change everything, even though I know that doesn't exist. Like, you can only do that for yourself. But that's probably what I'm struggling with most at the moment. Just that trust yourself, because there's no one else to trust to do it for you.
Yeah, no, because they're all looking at the lens through their life, not again. Exactly. You know, it comes back to that again. So, failure. What does failure mean to you, and how would it show up?
What I love about the entrepreneur world is that we are more and more embracing failure. There's so many things that I don't love about the entrepreneur world, but that is one thing that I think we're starting slowly to get better at. Or the people, you know, the sorts of people like the networks, particularly women that we move in, I think are getting better at that. But it is, you know, it's that disappointment thing again. Like, failure is disappointing. It can call, if you let it, call into question all the things like that you think you know. And then so, well, like, if I can't make this work, then that must mean I can't ever make anything work ever in my life again. Yeah, whereas in my day job, and if I'm looking externally at other people, I can see the reasons to celebrate failure, because it's just, you know, it's the best learnings that we have is through things not working. But it's hard to recognize that in yourself.
Totally. While you were talking, you mentioned that there were things that you loved about being an entrepreneur, and there were things that you weren't such a fan of. What are some of the things that you're not such a fan of?
Look, I think I was just having a conversation with someone about this morning. It's probably the coaching world more than anything, because I hate it, but I've called myself a coach, and then I go, oh, I hate it because there's so many people using that word and it's lost its meaning. And I know how hard it is to actually find good quality people to give you advice. So I think it's that stuff. You spend too much time with the same set of people. You think the whole world is that way, or the whole world is just making up stuff or not being transparent. And it's not true. Like, this is, again, it's my own stuff that I'm letting things get to me because of something that's obviously going on with me. But I think there's so many false pretenses in the online world, and things that can make us all feel like crap about ourselves, but they're not based in anything. They're the things that disappoint me, I think, and that words like mentoring or coaching have really lost their meaning, I think, because there's nothing to stop anyone calling themselves that. And I'm not saying they should have some certificate on their wall, because I don't think that adds anything either. It's just about everyone's a coach, everyone's a mentor, and I almost discount my own life experience and professional experience because I get caught up in it, I guess, or I think, well, you have to have a certain thing to have credibility, and we forget about the things we do have. And I don't know what I'm saying.
No, but I totally get what you're saying, because it's like I've struggled with that too, with the calling myself a coach or a mentor or whatever. I never really know. I just put like a lot of slashes in there and to cover all bases, because I don't really know what it is that I do. But it's also like it's a minefield, because it's like not everyone is open and honest and transparent. And so you end up putting your faith and trust in people who aren't necessarily legit. But then there's this flip to it. Like, I just feel like life is like one big dichotomy, right? And for every this side, there is that side. And it's like there's this other side where, for me, I also know that I have really great intuition, and I have a really great gift of being able to reflect back to people what they need. So, mm-hmm. So what is that? Is that how a coach works? Or is that how, you know what I mean? Like, there are gifts that are innate to us all, that could definitely fall under the banner of a coach. But then there's also this whole big industry of coaching that it's confusing.
It is. Yeah, you're right, though. Like, and I think what it is as well, the dichotomy is that there is so many amazing things about this world that I love, and the friends I've made and the relationships and the way that you talk to your online friends. You're often so much more open and honest than you are with real people in your life. And that there's something in the way that we all work in these businesses that opens that up, I think, and that's really amazing. But yeah, I think there is the bigger industry side of things that's kind of overwhelming and doesn't always feel good.
Totally. So we all have, an evil bitch in our heads telling us a bunch of untruths about ourselves. What is yours? What's the record on playing at the moment for you?
Basically, she likes to undermine any success that I've had and explain that away as a happy accident in order to prove why success that I'm looking for will never come. She's very manipulative.
Yeah. They tend to be. They all have similar records. So flipping that around, what does success mean to you?
Mm. And that's a really good question, because this is something that I question all the time. And I think I am trying to build something that is bigger than me. That doesn't mean I'm trying to build something that has 10 staff, because I'd rather not do that. But I am trying to build something that lasts longer than me, and I don't even know what that means. So that's sort of the vision level of success. Like, I am trying to do something that stands alone in itself and is that people connect with and really changes people, the way they feel about themselves or their businesses or whatever. And then personally, I am trying to build something. I mean, my business is very much a creative outlet for me, and sadly I'd do it even if it made no money, just because I love it. Well, I wouldn't do it forever, but, you know, I love what I do, which is great, but I do want it to maybe paying for things, you know, buying freedom, buying choice, buying flexibility, that I want it to do that for me.
What you said really resonated with me, because I actually just said that this morning, that I want to build something like that. I've known that I was here for a greater purpose, like for something greater than me. Yeah, it's just nice to have that reflected back. Thank you.
Sounds like I need to go and listen to your episode. We're on the same page.
Yeah, totally, totally. Collective cloud and all that kind of spiritual woo-woo. Freedom. What does freedom mean to you, and what does that look like?
I think it's just options. It's the ability to say no, say yes, and, you know, almost make your own schedule. And that, I mean that on a very day-to-day, but also a bigger, more metaphorical level. I think that's all it is I don't see myself as a location independent entrepreneur or anything like that. I love traveling, but I've learned that I actually don't want to work when I'm traveling. I'd rather
have a holiday,
able to travel a lot and holiday, all of those things. So yeah, it's just the ability to do the things I want to do when I want to do them. And that takes a lot of things, but that includes money and it includes supportive people around you and all of those sorts of things.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
The best way is to come and join my Facebook group, which is free and it's easy. It's called Empire Builders, but you can find it at bit.ly/startgrowthrive. That's kind of where I hang out every day and talk about what I'm doing, and as well as, you know, chatting to other people. So that's probably the best place.
And then the podcast.
The podcast is Empire by Design, which is in iTunes, or you can go to katiewyatt.me to find all of the back catalogue there.
The takeaway: exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper, and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
Look, I think sort of come up quite a bit in our discussion. It is that thing of, like, you don't grow or evolve until you start. And so just start where you are, put skin in the game, done is better than perfect. Like, whatever mantra resonates with you, that will move you forward and stop, you know, thinking I would like to do this someday, to just taking one step and doing something. That's where I started, and I, you know, I'm so glad I did. So that's what I would say to other people.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been fun. I was scared.
I'm always super nervous before I jump on an interview too. I had Rescue Remedy, so just putting that out there. No, it didn't hurt too much.
And it's a very different, you know, you've got a really different show going on. Very, just, you go in places that I never expected. So that was really unusual but nice. So thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out.